Let's see here. The first poet we have here is one of my favorite people on the whole planet. Poet, I met her when she was about 11 years old. Jan Beatty, come on up here. See, where's she at? Mister, can I read a poem, please?
Thanks, Jim. When I was about 10, Jimmy was already about 40. And it was a long time ago. But I just wanted to read a poem by Lois Greenberg. I know a lot of us are thinking about Lois. And as Joan said, her service for Lois is Thursday morning in Mount Lebanon at 10 a.m. And I don't remember the details, but Joan's going to resend the information. But I'm going to read a poem of Lois's here. And this is really the last poem in her book. And I know that Lois loved this poem because she was always talking about it. And I love that about Lois. I mean, she would blow her own horn in a good way. And I love that about her, you know. And she and I would have fights. I guess you did too with her, Michael. I know you were Lois's teacher. Yeah, she was a fighter, and we had a lot of disagreements. But then they. Madeline, is Madeline still here? No. Oh yeah. Yeah, that's part of teaching, right? Okay. So this is called Hydrangea and Freefall. And this was a poem that Lois wrote after Tor Derricotte. Hydrangea and Freefall. I envied that luscious burst of bubble flower, cellular profusion that defies constraint. And I was reminded of that little girl in the aqua dress jumping off the porch step in freefall, head thrown back, arms outstretched, reaching for the sky in full confidence that the brick path would be there when she landed. And my father, aiming his Rolleiflex, smile now, honey, hold still. Even as I floated, free in space, I just knew I owned. So this is sort of refers to the cover photograph that she wanted on the cover. And she wanted it green. I mean, she told me what to do the whole thing. She told me everything to do. And I just did it. So, but that's what's. We loved about Lois, love about Lois. And also I want to read a poem by M.A. Her new book is just out. It's called The Leaving Field by Mad Books. And I'm going to read one of M.A.'s. She was going to try to make it tonight, but M.A. Sinuber, I think you all know she's going to have heart surgery May 15th. And But she was really happy with the book, and we'll be thinking about her. I'm going to read the title poem, In the Leaving Field. Okay, this print is small, okay. That's better. I'm looking for you in the field, but you are not here. I'm spinning around to find you. In that truck ahead of me, the one I followed for 2 miles through Squirrel Hill, if you turn left, I will see your profile and your white beard. I'm waiting for you to get off the airplane. Your quick leaving frightened me. We asked you so soon. My eyes are sanded with sleep. I lie down in the tall asphalt grass. Please swaddle me, swoon me. It must be you in that truck. Please turn left so I can see you one more time. So.
I need to tell you guys the rules up here, too. Just so you know, before we go on, this is 2 short poems or 1 long poem. But please do not sit here and read Ezra Pond's cantos. Okay. It's too long. Okay, but I understand. Keep it like reasonable, because I have a very, I'll let you hang here for a minute, but she won't. Okay, come on, next person. Lucille, come on up here.
You know me, if it's too dark, I'll probably start swearing. So, pray. Oh, good, I can read it. The cat... Quiet, please. The cat and the crow. Little noises around my house are calling me to listen. Birds calling in the yard. The cat lapping milk in the kitchen. A weed tree creaking against the fence. My cat will never climb that tree. Thorns grow on its branches. From somewhere in the trees, on the other side of the high wood fence, a crow is calling, "Caw, caw." I've never seen its black coat. Solitaire cards sit idle on the table where I sometimes write. Thunder rolls beyond the creaking thorn tree, beyond the birds calling their mates. A distant man shouts, "Yo!" calling his children in from thunder. The cat sleeps undisturbed on a stack of boxes where reams of paper are waiting for poems. The crow is silent, ceased her cawing. Thunder claps near, wind blows the rain, and I have closed the west window and moved to the center of the house. The crow is silent. She watches me from a hidden window, thinking her thoughts into my mind.
Michael Albright, come on.
Thank you. I appreciate it. My name's Michael Albright. I'm neither a mad woman and I don't have an attic, but I appreciate the opportunity. I have one poem, and I picked it because it's local, and I'm sure many of you have been here. It's titled "The Hall of Dead Birds and Viking Tools." Micah loves dinosaurs, but they can be frightening when you see them up close. Or at least their bones, or at least whatever it is that has replaced their bones, reassembled and propped up in menacing full size. T-Rex with his huge incisors and tiny arms, definitely big enough to swallow up a little blonde boy, if not a whole Jeep from that stupid and exciting film. At lunch, Micah pretends to eat cafe chicken tenders while debriefing his aunts on what he's seen so far. If I got eaten by a T-Rex, I would be dead for the rest of my life. We all have a nervous laugh before sweeping up the uneaten food and heading off to the Egypt room and the Hall of North American Mammals. Later at home, he plays with his sister on my living room rug, secure from predators, prehistoric and real, but not imagined. My daughter talks about the day and his quote, and the dark behind the cute. He's been like this since Nana died, always asking questions. He told me that the other day, that when Mommy and Daddy died, he wanted to die too. But he'll grow out of this, right? She looks at me, hoping I would know the fix for this. No, I say defenselessly, as the microwave peels and the pang of popcorn fills the room. No, no, he won't. Thank you.
Well, I'm not from Pittsburgh. I'm from the Pacific Northwest. went to 13 schools before I ever graduated because I had horrible parents. You know, those things happen. But anyway, I was told I couldn't write. I was told girls can't do math, but I picked up a damn math book and taught myself calculus, was teaching other people it. So I don't believe that for 1 second. But this year I turned 60, and I decided I'd join Mad Women because I want to write, and I hope I can do it. So I was in the writer's studio, and Jean Hirsch said, "What's a poem?" And I thought, "What's a poem?" So I wrote this, and I put it on a PowerPoint demonstration for my other graduate students who are in English and everything, and I'm the only math teacher there. So I wrote a poem, and I put it on my math demonstration, and I call it poetry. When I read a poem, sometimes I remember, clouds only cover the sun, stars dance in their own breath, coyotes howls seem less lonesome, and spirit winks. That's it. Okay, this is dedicated to Katie Phillips at Brentwood High School that was in 9/11, worked in the fiscal district, and decided that she didn't want to and came home to Pittsburgh. She teaches math at Brentwood High School, and I observed her and wrote a research paper on her. And, of course, I had to put a poem at the beginning of the demonstration. So this is mathematical, people. A little bit Einstein in there. Einstein's fourth dimension. Time and space goes together. Time is in. Dew evaporating on morning ivy. Steam condescending on mirrors. It flows in gasoline puddles draining into sewers. Tastes like snowflakes gently caught on tongues. Sounds like echoes whispers. It is in screeching tires on wet pavements, pauses between motions, the breath I am. It carries potential to the eternal, motion of the temporary. It measures lifetimes into patterns, easily untangled with a pull on either end.
Okay, I needed my costume, which goes with the boots for this poem. One of my favorite editors, Kayla Sargeson, is here. Big shout out to Kayla. And I was going through my poetry. This is a remarkably old one, but I thought maybe it would appeal to her or any of you. It's called Just a Lonesome Cowgirl. I want to throw a lasso so skillfully that it will fall down over your head, your hips, and your legs before you even notice. When it settles on your ankles, I want to carefully draw it in. The lariat will tighten just enough. I have reasons for wanting to hobble you. Thank you.
All right. I'm going to wind it down tonight. I was going to read you some of my stuff, a poem. I could read you about The Secret Book of Water, Old Man Mumbling, Nobody Ever Whacks Off and Thinks of My Friends. Loneliness Wears a Smiley Face, Underpants, Changing the Name to Denny, or Kenny Ken's Head Looks Like a Monkey's Ass. I'm not going to read you any of those. I'm going to save them. Instead, I'm going to read you a real poet here that I think's real, more real than I will ever be. Carl Sandburg, Happiness. I ask professors who teach the meaning of life to tell me what is happiness. And I went to the famous executive who boss the work of thousands of men. They all shook their heads and gave me a smile as though I was trying to fool with them. And then one Sunday afternoon, I wandered out along the Despelines River, and I saw a crowd of Hungarians under a tree with their women and children and a keg of beer and an accordion. Thank you, and I'll see you guys next week. And next week we have Pittsburgh Poetry Society. See y'all next week.